We're on Nun Aleph from Beis, three lines up from the bottom, beginning the new Mishnah. The Mishnah begins that Habuchar notel pishnayim minichse ha'av ve'inu notel pishnayim minichse ha'em. The firstborn son takes a double portion of the inheritance of the father's estate, but not if the brothers are inheriting property from the mother. In that case, the Buchar takes a single portion like everybody else. Furthermore, the Mishnah teaches ve'eno notel b'shvach. The Bukhar's right to a second portion does not include any added value that accrued to the estate after the death of the father. Ve'lo beroy kebamuchzik. Nor does the law of pishnayim apply to properties that we call roy, meaning to anything that was owed to the father, but was not actually muchzik. The father did not actually have possession of the property at the time of his death. After the father's death, the debtor, let's say, came and paid the estate, gave some property to the estate that he owed, the firstborn second portion would not extend to that newly received property. Rather, it would be equally divided among the brothers. Continuing now to Nun Bezim and Aleph, the Mishnah says further, Veloha Isha Biksubasa. These same limitations apply to a woman who wants to collect her ksuba, of course, the amount stipulated in her ksuba document that she has the right to collect from the estates in the event that her husband dies. However, she may only collect from properties that the husband was already in possession of at the time of his death to satisfy the ksuba debt, and she's also not able to collect from any value that was created after the husband's death. The Mishnah adds, "V'lo habanos b'mizonos se'an." These limitations also apply to the support payments that are owed to a man's stepdaughters, meaning as part of the ksuba, he stipulates the woman he marries who has daughters from a previous marriage, that he'll provide them with support for 5 years. The halach is that if he dies before those 5 years, then the daughters may collect support from the estate. But the Mishnah rules that they're limited by these same limitations. They cannot collect from value that's created after the father's death, nor from prospective properties that were owed to the father that were only given to the estate after the death of the father. Velo asayavam, nor may a yavam, a brother-in-law specifically, if a man, let's say, called Reuven, died without children, leaving a widow, the Torah says that if there's a surviving brother, say Shimon, Shimon has a mitzvah to marry the yavama, to perform the levirate marriage, and thereby perpetuate the name of his deceased brother. The Torah says that as a result of fulfilling this mitzvah, the yavam receives the estate of his deceased brother. However, our Mishnah teaches the yavam does not receive properties that were only roy, that were owed to the mace, nor shvach, if a property went up in value. Later, he doesn't receive that. It's referring to where the father had also died, but the brothers didn't yet divide up the estate. The Mishnah is saying that although the yavam takes over the deceased portion of the father's estate, however, that's only as far as the value that existed at that time. If it accrued later, though, the yavam would not receive anything more of that over the other brothers. And the Mishnah now reiterates, V'kulam ein notlim v'shvach v'lebaroi k'memuchzak. None of the people collecting mentioned above get to collect again in the shvach, the value that was added afterwards, nor in roi k'memuchzak, nor properties that were merely roi, where the deceased merely had a potential basis to maybe later become the owner of that property. When the property comes to the estate after the person's death, all of these different creditors may not collect from that property. The Gemara begins by explaining the Mishnah's first ruling that the firstborn gets a double portion only of the father's estate, but not the mother's estate. The Gemara asks, "My time, what's the reason for this?" The Gemara explains, "Amar Kra." This is derived from the language of the pasuk in Kiseitse, where it says, "Lo mishpat habechora." The Gemara darshins this to be saying that only for him, only the father gives the double portion to his firstborn, mishpat habechor leish, ve'ein mishpat habechor leisha, but not the mother. There's no law of pishnayim with regards to the estate of the mother. The Mishnah then rules that ve'eino notel b'shvach, nor does the firstborn's double portion include any improvements to the estate which occurred after the death of the father. The Gemara provides the source for this, Tichsiv. This is based on the language of the pasuk there, of Bechol Asher Yimatze Lo. He gets a double portion of all that is found with him. So this added value, which did not exist at the time of the father's death, is not included in the Bechor Spishnaim. And similarly, Velo Berekev Muchzik, the Bechor also is not entitled to a double portion from Roy properties, only it came to the father after death, for the same reason, Nechsib Bechol Asher Yimatze Lo. For the Roy properties also do not fall under this description of properties that were already found with him, that the father owned when he died. Thus, the Roy properties as well are not included in the Bechor's second portion. The Mishnah then said, Velo Isha B'Ksubasa, a woman collecting her ksuba from the estate of the deceased husband, is also subject to these same limitations. The Gemara questions this, is this true? V'Amar Shmuel, I Shmuel said something that seems to imply the opposite. Shmuel said that the rule is Balchov Gove Es HaShvach. A creditor is entitled to collect from Shvach, even from new improvements that were made to the property after the debtor died. So what's a ksuba? Ksuba is a debt. A woman collecting her ksuba is a creditor. So based on this rule of Shmuel, it seems that she should be able to collect from Shvach. So is Shmuel against our Mishnah? The Gemara answers, no, Amar Rabbi Abba. Rabbi said that although everyone agrees to Shmuel's statement, that as a general rule, creditors may collect even from Shvach. If there's some improvement after the debtor died, yeah, you can collect for that to satisfy the debt. However, Mikule Ksuba Shanu Kan. Our Mishnah teaches one of the leniencies, or perhaps we can say your weaknesses, of this particular creditor, a woman who is collecting her ksuba. When it comes to the ksuba debt, the woman collecting the ksuba is not empowered as much as your standard creditor. Chazal make a distinction. They say, a creditor, it's very clear, he lent money, now he's owed this money. So his powers in terms of how he can collect to satisfy the debt are put at a certain level, including that he can collect from Shvach. But in the case of Isha for ksuba, it's a different kind of a debt in the sense that, yes, the Rabbanan enacted that she should be able to collect this amount upon the death of her husband. But of course, it wasn't purely a sacrifice on her part to enter this arrangement. She wanted to get married, presumably. So essentially, the Rabbanan do not regard Isha collecting her ksuba as a full, regular, standard creditor. So she does not enjoy the right to collect from even Shvach. The Mishnah then said, V'lo habanos b'mezonosein, nor may daughters, this man's stepdaughters, that there's an agreement that he will support them for 5 years, but he died before the 5 years, so they could collect for that support from the estate, but not from Shvach or Roy. The Gemara explains, my time, what's the reason? The reason is because Tanai Ksuba Ksuba Dami. Any debt as this, which emanates from the Ksuba, is really an off-branch of the Ksuba itself. It's one of the stipulations. It's part of the general enactment of the Ksuba, this arrangement that he should support his stepdaughters, his wife's daughters from a previous marriage. Therefore, the rights of the daughters vis-a-vis this debt they may collect, these mizonos, the support payments, are subject to the same limitations as the basic right of collection of ksuba itself. So just as the woman herself who collects her ksuba is subject to these limitations, she cannot collect from Shvach or Roy, so it is in the case of the daughters. They may not collect the support payments from Shvach or Roy of the estate. The Mishnah said, V'lo yavam, nor may yavam, who, as we mentioned, as a result of performing yibam, as a result of marrying the widow of his deceased brother, if they didn't leave children, the Torah says that he inherits his brother, including that if the father had died, the Yavam will receive the portion that the deceased would have received. But the Mishnah said he can't take from Shvach or Roy. So Gemara explains, my time, and what's the reason? The reason is, B'char Karyei Rachmana, is because in the Pasuk that teaches this halacha, this right of the Yavam to take the estate of the mace, whose name he is perpetuating, the Torah, in the drush we make on this pasuk, refers to the Yavam with the term Bechar. The Torah calls him the firstborn. So what's the practical import of this? It is to impose the same limitations that apply in the case of the Bukhar special second portion, namely that he may not collect for Pishnayim from Shvach or Roy. So it is with regards to the special right of the Yavam to take over the estate of the mace, whose widow he is marrying. This right does not extend to Roy or Shvach properties. The Gemara discusses in specifically what case the above applies. Amar Abaye said, Lo shanu ela b'shvach sheshavchu nechasim bein misa liyibo. The limitation the Mishnah teaches here, that the Yavam may not take from Shvach, from improvements that happen afterwards, specifically applies in the case where, again, we have this brother died childless and the father died, leaving an estate. So again, we're saying the Yavam takes over the portion that would have went to the deceased brother. And Abai explains that the Mishnah is telling us that any improvements that occurred between the event of the brother's death and the event of this Yavam performing the Yavam marrying the widow are not part of what the Yavam gets to keep for himself. Rather, that additional Shvach would be equally divided among all of the brothers. Avol, however, Abai explains, the Ben Yibam L'Chaluka Shakil. But with regards to improvements that occurred between the event of the Yibam, this brother already married the widow, if between that event and the actual division of the father's estate, and there was further improvements to the estate, as far as that improvement, you know, the part that's included in the portion of the deceased, Shakil the Yavam does collect even those improvements. My time, what's the reason? It says, because, what is the language of the Pasuk there by Yibam? It says, Yakum Hashem Achiv HaMeis Amar Rachmana. How does the Torah teach that the Yavam gets to keep the portion of the mace? It says that he, the drasha, understands that it's referring to the Yavam shall be Yakum, shall go in place of his brother, meaning he takes over his brother's property, whatever the brother would have kept of the estate. So Abai points at Vahre Kam. Behold, the Yavam has performed the act that already makes him entitled to the estate, the portion his brother would have inherited. So Abai is saying, at this point, the Yavam already is to consider the owner of the deceased's portion, and thus, why shouldn't he keep even improvements that occurred afterwards? It's already considered his, and so, of course, he gets to keep any improvements. It's already his, so obviously, any improvements that occur to his own property go to him. So says Abaye. However, Rava said no. Rather, filu ben yim lachaluka nami lo shakil. Even in your case, even if the improvement in question occurred between the brother's act of marrying the widow, but if there was improvement before the father's estate was divided, the yavam would not be able to claim the mace's portion of those additional improvements. My time, what's the reason? Rav argues that, well, since this whole halacha is based on the analogy between Yavam and Bechar, that the Torah calls him a Bechar, and therefore he's subject to those same limitations that we find by Pishnayim of Bechar, therefore, it's reasonable to assume that the way it actually plays out is Kebechar is just as it does in the case of an actual Bechar firstborn. In that Ma Bechar Ein Lo Kodem Chalukah, just as, what does the Torah say by an actual firstborn? The Torah simply says that as long as this firstborn didn't actually collect his Pishnayim yet, if some improvement occurred after the father's death, before they actually divided up the property, the Torah says the Bechar does not get a second portion of those additional improvements. So Af Yavam Nami Ein Lo Kodem Chalukah, so it should be in the case of Yavam, that as long as the estate has not yet been divided, the Yavam should not have exclusive claim to the amount of improvements corresponding to the portion of the mace, even though he did Yibam, but no, he didn't actually collect, they didn't divide the estate yet, so he cannot collect Shvach improvements of the deceased's portion in this case either. The Mishnah then reiterated that V'kulam ein notlin v'shvach, none of the people above discussed in the Mishnah are able to collect these various debts, these portions, if we're talking about improvements that occurred after the person who left the estate died. So the question is why the Mishnah has to repeat this. It seems redundant. So turning to the base, the Gemara explains that by repeating this ruling, the Mishnah here is coming to include in this teaching even improvements that just occur naturally without the person specifically working to bring about those improvements. Kagon, for example, chafura v'avu shubali. Let's say at the time the person died, he left some shoots of grain. After his death, they grew into ears of grain. Or shapufe v'avu tamari. Let's say he left a tree which just had buds at the time of his death, and then they grew into dates. So you know, it grew just by itself. Perhaps, since this is just the natural course of things, maybe in this case it's not considered shvach. Maybe it's considered he already had that at the time of his death because it was bound to happen, it was going to grow, it was on its way for that. The Mishnah teaches us that no, in fact, this too is considered shvach, and therefore none of the individuals listed in our Mishnah may collect from it. And the Mishnah also reiterates v'lo b'roi k'b'mochzok, that roi is not the same as mochzok in this regard. That is, if we're discussing properties that were merely roi, they were collectible eventually by the person who left the estate, someone, let's say, owed him this property, but if it wasn't actually part of the estate at the time of his death, then the individuals of our Mishnah cannot collect from it. So why does the Mishnah repeat this? The Gemara explains, Lasuye nichse de aviaba. Similar point here, that the Mishnah comes to include, let's say, even a case where happened was, first, let's say Reuven died, and we're discussing, for example, the right of Chanoch, his firstborn, to collect the Pishnaim. What kind of properties of Reuven may Chanoch collect his Pishnaim from? So we're saying, no, it can't be from properties that Reuven didn't actually have yet. But what if Yaakov, Reuven's father, was still living at the time of Reuven's death? So we might have said that since these grandchildren stood to inherit the estate of Yaakov, their grandfather, for that's the line of inheritance here, Yaakov to Reuven, then to them, to the grandchildren. So maybe this case isn't considered roi. It stands to be inherited by Reuven and then his grandchildren. So if Reuven happened to predecease his father, we might have said that this is not considered roi, it's considered as if Reuven already had it, and therefore maybe the Bechor gets Pishnayim from the properties here. Once Yaakov dies, the Mishnah therefore reiterates V'lo b'roi k'mochzok, to say no. The properties have to literally be in possession of the person now leaving the estate for the Bechor or any of these other individuals to be able to collect from it. The next Mishnah discusses Yovel, for as we'll soon see, the case of Bechor is part of the list the Mishnah is going to present when discussing what kind of properties go back to the original owner at Yovel. Of course, the Torah teaches that the ancestral properties, if somebody, let's say, sold his family property, the Torah says that every Yovel, every 50 years, on the Yovel year, such ancestral properties automatically revert back to their original owners. So our Mishnah teaches that V'elu she'ein chozer me'yovel. In the following cases, the ancestral field does not go back. We don't say that the original transaction is automatically undone. First, we have Habechora, property that the firstborn inherited as part of his extra Pishnayim portion. We do not say that upon the arrival of Yovel, that this automatically goes back to the original estate. And V'ayoreshes Ishto, and when he inherits his wife, this too is not subject to the halach of Yovel, doesn't go back at Yovel to the wife's family. And V'hamiyavim is Eshes Achiv. And the Yavim case that we saw in the previous Mishnah, that again, the halacha is the Yavim gets to keep the property of the mace, whose widow he married. Here as well, the land that he received as a part of this right to inherit the brother does not go back at the Yovel year. V'hamatana. And finally, if someone received even an ancestral piece of property as a gift, this does not go back at the Yovel year. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. However, v'chachamim omrim, chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir on one of these issues. Chachamim say that no, hamatana kimecher, it's a gift transaction that's halachically the same as a sale as far as Yovel, and so just as Everybody agrees that if it's a standard sale of an ancestral property, that goes back at Yovel. Chumseh, a gifted field, also goes back at Yovel. Goes back to the person who gave the gift. The Mishnah presents another Tanna, Rabbi Elazar, Omer, Kulam Chozrim BeYovel. All of these cases mentioned here go back at Yovel. And the Mishnah presents another view. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka Omer says that in the case of Hayorish is Ishto, where someone inherited the property of his wife, Yachzil b'nei mishpacha, this property goes back to her family. And the Gemara will explain we're dealing with this specific case. V'yinakamin es adamim, though he makes a certain deduction from the price. The Gemara will explain everything here. Will explain all the opinions, including the case Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka is referring to. The Gemara will explain the basis of each view. So the Gemara begins with my time in the Rabbi Meir. What is Rabbi Meir's reason for saying that in all the cases he listed, the properties do not go back at Yovel? The Gemara explains, Rabbi Meir's reason is, Mecher hu d'yom rachmana leder b'yovel. In Rabbi Meir's understanding, the Torah only states with regards to an ancestral field that's sold that goes back at Yovel, goes back to the seller. Matan of Yerusha, lo. But not a field that was gifted or that was received as inheritance. And the Mefarshim adjusts the text here. V'hani di Yerusha, Yerusha, the Matana, Matana. We can thus apply the above distinction to the different cases Rabbi Meir mentioned. Those that are classified as Yerusha, okay, for that reason, they don't go back. And those that are classified as a gift don't go back at Yovel for that reason. In the Gemara now classifies each of the cases listed by Rabbi Meir. The Gemara explains that as far as Bechor, the second portion of the firstborn, the Gemara explains how is this classified? Well, the Torah's language is Lo seis lo pishnayim. Father shall give his firstborn a double portion. So we see Matona karyeh rachmana. The Torah refers to pishnayim with the language of nesina, of a gift. Now the hayorish es ishto. What about the case of a husband who inherits his wife? Why does Rabbi Meir say that doesn't go back at Yovel? The Gemara explains that in Rabbi Meir's opinion, Yerusha Sabal D'Araisa, the halacha that a husband inherits his wife is considered a biblical halacha. It's Minatara. So in other words, it's considered a bona fide case of Yerusha, and as such, it doesn't go back at Yovel. And finally, V'hamiyav Meseh Shesachiv, regarding the Yavam, who upon doing Yivam receives the portion of the deceased, what is that transaction considered? The Gemara explains, Bachar Karyeh Rachmana. Since, as you mentioned earlier, the Torah refers to the Yavam as Bachar when discussing how he inherits the brother, so this means that the halachic classification of the Yavam's entitlement is that of a gift. So this doesn't go back at Yovel either because it's considered a gift. Again, only a sale, according to Rabbi Meir, goes back at Yovel. The Mishnah presented that V'chachamim omrim matana k'mecher. Chachamim said, no, gift is the same as a sale and also goes back at Yovel. The Gemara asks, my tamay d'rabbanan, what is the Rabbanan's basis for this opinion? The Gemara explains that in the Pasuk in Behar there, where it discusses the law of Yovel, we find the word tashuvu, which grammatically is superfluous. So we darshan, it comes le rabba says a matana, that even if the ancestral land was gifted, that too goes back at Yovel. The Gemara explains that, consequently, the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Meir in the one case of a land that was actually given as a gift to somebody else. The Rabbanan hold that even in this case, the land does go back, but they agree with Rabbi Meir. All of the other cases, even the cases of Bechor and Yavam, which Rabbi Meir claimed are considered gifts, the Gemara explains, in the opinion of the Rabbanan, no, v'hani kuli Yerushaninu. They consider all the other cases as inheritance. That is, in the case of Bechor, the firstborns, the double portion, the Rabbanan interpret as follows, that Omer Kra, l'ses lo pishnayim. So, of course, the Torah says, you shall give to the firstborn the double portion. The Rabbanan argue, makish chelek b'chor l'chelek pashut. The Rabbanan say that by this very title, by calling it pishnayim, it's two portions, it means the pasuk is comparing the extra portion to the regular portion. And samachelik pashid Yerusha avchelik b'char Yerusha. Specifically, that just as, of course, the regular portion is considered inheritance, so too the extra portion is considered inheritance. Therefore, the Rabbanan agree with Rabbi Meir that does not go back at Yovel. And then everything falls into place, because now we understand why the Rabbanan agree as far as the Yavim too. That, as Rabbi Meir pointed out, Yavim is called Bechor, so whatever the rule by Bechor is the same by Yavim. Okay, so that means that once again, the field will not go back. It's Yerusha, just like Bechor himself. And the Rabbanan also agree with Rabbi Meir that a husband inherits his wife on the biblical level, that's also Yerusha, therefore that doesn't go back either. The Mishnah then presented that Rabbi Elazar Omer Kulam Chozer Meyovel. Elazar completely disagrees and says that in all these cases, the land goes back at Yovel. The Gemara explains his opinion that first of all, Savar Laka Rabbanan. The first step is that Rabbi Elazar agrees with the Rabbanan. And the Yomri Tashuvu L'Rabbas Esamatana Hudarshan from Tashuvu, we saw above that even if the field was gifted, it goes back at Yovel. The next step is that in Relazar's view, Vahani Kulu Mataninu, all of the cases discussed in the Mishnah here are considered gifts. First of all, Bechor, because the language is Lases Lo Pishnaim, given Pishnaim, so the term implies it's a gift, Matana Kri Rachmana. So this does go back at Yovel, since the Torah equates the gift with the sale. And further, v'hayorishes ishto, regarding the case of husband who inherits his wife, in Rabbi Elazar's opinion, Yerushas abal derabbanan. A husband only inherits his wife on the rabbinic level. The Torah itself doesn't say that the husband actually inherits his wife. Rather, it's considered like a gift. The rabbanan enacted, it's considered technically a gift that the husband inherits his wife. Okay, so this as well goes back at Yovel. And Vav Yamis Eishes Achiv, and now we understand the case of Yom as well, where Belazar argues. He says, yeah, that goes back too, because what's the status of this entitlement? Bechor Ki Rachmana. We go to the analogy between Yavim and Bechor. Sitar is saying, whatever the status is by Bechor, the same applies to the Yavim's portion. And since Belazar holds that Bechor is considered a gift, and a gift is the same as a sale, therefore the Yavim's portion as well goes back at Yovel. Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, said that Ha'achin Shecholku L'Kuchosein. Yochanan taught that once the brothers actually divide up the inherited estate, they're technically considered L'Kuchos, that they purchased these portions from each other. The idea is that when the father died, they all each had an equal portion of every part of the estate. So what is the nature of this process of dividing the estate? Rabbi Yochanan argues that, okay, now they're deciding that I'll forego this part, let you get that part, I'll take this part, meaning it's essentially a sale. That is, that Rabbi Yochanan rejects the alternative interpretation, which utilizes a concept called Breira, which says that, no, we should look at this as that we're retroactively clarifying which portion fell to each brother all along. And if we say that, well, then we can consider the whole thing from beginning to end Yerusha. Rechna says, no, once they ultimately divide the estate, that process is considered a sale. Consequently, Machziren Zelazeve Yovel. Halach is that this will automatically revert and then goes back to the original status. We have to, you know, pull the estate together again with the arrival of Yovel, which, of course, automatically causes all sales to be reverted. The Gemara challenges Rabbi Yochanan's ruling from our Mishnah, Moshe Rav Hoshaya. He says, our Mishnah taught us, Ve'elu she'ein chozrin b'yovel. The Mishnah listed cases, transactions, where the transaction does not go back at the Yovel year. And the first case was a Bechora, the firstborn second portion. The Mishnah rules, this is not reverted, it doesn't go back at the Yovel. According to Yochanan, why not? I thought we were saying that once the brothers divide up the estate, we consider that a sale. If it's a sale, it should go back at Yovel. Mara answers, Omer le Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar answered, Ma yein chozrin. What does the Mishnah really mean when it says that the Bechor's extra portion does not go back on Yovel? What it really means is, Ein chozrin levatala. it does not completely undo the original right of the Bukhar to take the extra portion. It is Rabbi Elazar suggesting that really the Tana of our Mishnah here agrees exactly with Rabbi Yochanan, that since whenever brothers divide an estate, that's considered a sale, therefore that transaction certainly will be undone with the arrival of Yovel. Everything will pull back together. But all the Mishnah means when it says that it, quote unquote, does not go back, is that we don't say that the Bechor now loses his right to claim Pishnai. No, that right remains. Just they'll have to, you know, do this again. Technically, they'll just go through the motions. They'll have to, you know, redistribute this because of the Yovel year, but that doesn't negate the Bechor's right to claim Pishnayim. The Gemara has a question on this, though. Mask of Lord Sheshes. He asked, but according to this interpretation, Mechlal de Man de Yomer Chozrin, but following this through, if you're telling me that the first opinions presented in the Mishnah that we've been discussing until this point, that when they say, when Rimer and the Chacham and the Mishnah say that the portion does not go back, really does go back, but it means the Bechor's right to claim a double portion isn't negated. But now let's follow this through with the opposing view in the Mishnah of Rabbi Elazar, who comes along and says, no, it does go back. According to this suggested interpretation, Rabbi Elazar would be saying, Chozrin levatola kamar. If he's saying the opposite of what Rimer said, then that means that you're Rimer saying that the Bechor does not lose his right to collect Pishnayim, they'll pool together and he'll get a double portion again at the Yovel year. Elazar comes along to say, no, it's completely negated. Upon the arrival of Yovel, it's completely nullified, and the Bechor loses the right to collect Pishnayim, and if Sheshes finds it untenable to suggest such a thing, that why should the Bechor lose his right to get Pishnayim? The Gemara says, Kori Rav Chama, Alei, the Rav Sheshes. Chama first prefaces by applying a pasuk from Koheles to Rav Sheshes, the pasuk of Tova Chachma Yim Nachala, that the wisdom is good along with the Nachal, along with inheriting something. With this he meant that you're missing some supplementary information you should have included in your vast knowledge of the Tanaic teachings, all of the Amoraic teachings. For there's an Amoraic teaching here which answers your question. That is, Velo Shemiya Lei, Proshim changed it to Lei. Did he not aware? Was Sheshes not aware of Ahadichiyasi Ravin Amr Rabbi Yochanan? Yamilar, some say, was Rabbi Elazar, Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, that indeed, my chosen, chosen levatala. That is exactly what Rabbi Elazar is saying. Elazar is going all the way with this. He's saying, yeah, because this case is fully subject to the law of Yovel, we go back, you know, as if this chalukah never happened, and that means the firstborn loses his right to collect Mishnayim. So the Amoraim explained, this is the accepted understanding, that that is indeed what Rabbi Elazar is saying. The Mishnah then presented that Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka Omer Yorishes Ishto Yachzer Lebnei, etc. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, the Mishnah seems to say that a husband who inherited his wife does have to return the Sedeh Chuzah, this ancestral property, back to her family at Yovel, but he deducts a certain amount from the price. So the Gemara starts to analyze this opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. The Gemara asks, Micah Savar, what does Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka hold on the issue of the basis in general for a husband to inherit his wife? Micah Savar, Yerusha Sabal, the Araisa. If Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka agrees with the view that according to the Torah itself, a husband inherits his wife, well then, Amai Yachzer Lebnei Mishpacha. Why would he rule that the property goes back if he holds that it's Yerusha, if it's inheritance, then it shouldn't be subject to Yovel? On the other hand, V'ikasar V'Yerusha Sabal D'Rabbanan, if the understanding of Yochum and Broke is that he holds that a husband doesn't really inherit his wife on the Torah level, it's just enacted by the Rabbanan as a kind of gift, and hence he's saying it is subject to enforced return upon Yovel. But then the problem is, Damim Maya Vidatayu. Then what is this about? He deducts some of the money, which really implies that the husband is being compensated, but why should he be compensated at all if it's simply a case where, because of the law of Yovel, he has to return it? Why is he getting any money? So how do we understand what Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is saying? The Gemara explains that Liolam Kesavar Yerusha Sabal Deraisa. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's opinion is that on the Torah level, the husband inherits his wife, and therefore, really, Yovel should not impact the husband's ownership of this field whatsoever. The Gemara explains, V'hachav Mayaskin, and here in the Mishnah, what are we dealing with? Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is referring to a very specific case. He's discussing where the husband inherited her family cemetery. And there is an enactment of the Rabbanan here that the husband should give this back, should allow the family to redeem it, to purchase it back. So there shouldn't be embarrassment to the family. To uphold the honor of the family, should be able to retain their ancestral cemetery. Therefore, Amar Rabbanan Lishkol Demei V'Ladar. The Rabbanan therefore said that they have the right to redeem this Beis HaKfaros back. Ukiritanya has explained in the Braisa. Braisa says the halacha is Amalcher Kivro V'Derech Kivro Amakom Amado or Beis Hespedo. If one sold a portion of his family, you know, burial place, whether the plot itself or the path going there, or the place where they would perform the mamid custom, or where they would give the eulogy, the halacha is ba'im b'nei mishpacha v'korma so ba'karcho. The family members have a right to forcibly bury the seller in the basic price, even though he sold it. Why do they have that right? Mishum b'gam mishpacha. To save embarrassment from the family. The family should be embarrassed. They had to go and sell his plot. So the Rabbanan said, if that happened, they have the right to and redeem it back and be able to bury the person in that plot that he sold. So essentially, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is saying that if the husband inherited his wife's family, Beis HaKfaros, the wife's family has a right to redeem that back. The Gemara now addresses, so what does he mean that the husband cannot be paid in full for this? He has to deduct a certain amount from the sale price when they're redeeming it back. The Gemara explains, it's referring to Demei Kever Ishto. He cannot charge for his wife's plot because he is obligated to provide a burial for his wife. So that portion of the redemption sale is deducted. This concludes the 8th paragraph of Bechoros, which was dedicated by Avram Deutsch for the 6 million who perished in the Holocaust, and for Tzva Hagana Yisrael, for the Israeli army, for their continued success, and it should be an everlasting schus, memory of the Kedoshim of the Holocaust, Hashem Yinakim Damam, Hajar Allah Yesh Bukhar.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shir. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.